We welcome back one of our regular players who's given such tremendous contribution over the years. That is Paul Merton. We also have one of our oldest players. He's been with the show since it first began. He's a senior citizen of Just a Minute. His contributions are valuable. That is Peter Jones. Someone who's played it less often, but with great aplomb when he does come here, the effervescent and witty Stephen Fry. And bringing up the feminine side of our show, we have the delightful and humorous Maria McCurlane. We're going to begin the show this week with Peter Jones, and who better? Peter, the subject is miracles. Will you tell us something about miracles in this game, starting now?
A miracle is an event that cannot really occur without some divine or supernatural intervention. And it's often misused, this word. And you sometimes hear of a script writer who submitted a script to the BBC, and he tells you that within 2 days he received a telegram in reply and an offer of huge amounts of money if they were able to use it. And this, of course, he describes as a miracle, which indeed it would be. But what I'm hesitating for.
Maria McCurlane, new challenge.
Well, he just looked like he was fed up with it now.
No, he realised he was hesitating and he admitted it. And that is a correct challenge, Maria. So you get a point for a correct challenge. You take over the subject, which is miracles. You have 21 seconds available, starting now.
Frankly, it will be a miracle if I get through the next 10 seconds without being challenged, because...
Paul Merton challenge.
I don't believe in miracles.
Well, as that's not a correct challenge, we give Paul a bonus point because we enjoyed the interruption, but Maria gets a point because she was interrupted. She keeps the subject. 16 seconds available. Miracles, Maria, starting now.
One of my favourite miracles was turning water into wine. The end.
Stephen Fry challenge.
A little bit of hesitation, I think.
Yes, I think she waited for effect and it didn't come.
No, I didn't wait for effect. I really had nothing more to say. Right. That was my favourite miracle.
So, Stephen Fry, correct challenge, a point to you, 10 seconds available, miracles starting now.
Turning Le Pierre d'Or into wine, that would be a miracle, wouldn't it? Mind you, of course, that was our Lord's first miracle at the wedding at Canaan, I believe.
Yes, Paul challenged just
Cana, wasn't there an before Cana there?
I didn't notice it.
Did you not? Then it wasn't... probably didn't happen.
I did.
We're going to have a confrontation, are we, already, in the first round? Because the whistle was blown very strongly in my ear, so I didn't actually hear whether there was a hesitation or not. So I think the fair thing to say is that I didn't hear it. So, Stephen, you were speaking as the whistle went. You gained an extra point for doing so. And at the end of that round, Stephen Fry and Paul and Mary McCullen are equal in the lead with 2 points. Paul Merton has one. Peter Jones started, but he's... No. And Paul Merton, it's your turn. Begin. Paul, the subject now, Beelzebub. Tell us something about that character, or any way you like, in just a minute, starting now.
I would pronounce it Beelzebub. Of course, it's a name for the horned one, Satan, Lucifer, whatever you like, Mephistopheles.
Stephen Fry, you
I also answer to Stephen.
Stephen, yes, you yeah.
No, I'm saying the horned one, I'm saying... Just, I was
he
offering
was making
help.
A joke, Nicholas.
He was looking for names.
Yeah. He was making a joke.
I was making a joke.
No, no, don't worry about it.
You probably couldn't hear it because the whistle was going at the same time.
So what was your challenge?
No, there wasn't one.
There wasn't.
Just
a waste of time, so Paul gets a point for being interrupted.
Yeah, you've been told now, haven't you?
Sir's in a bait today.
49 seconds available for you, Paul, on Beelzebub, starting now.
I suppose if one believes in a devil, then you also have to think that there is such a thing as God. And I'm not really sure, and anybody knows I don't, because if there is such a thing as the great creator...
Paul, Stephen, you're challenged.
Stephen, my name's Stephen.
I know, it is yeah. Stephen. Yeah.
Two such a things...
Such
a thing as God and such a thing as devil.
Which is correct. That is probably right. He did say that. So, Stephen, you have a correct challenge. You have 37 seconds. Tell us something about Beelzebub starting now.
You keep saying Beelzebub. I think most people say Beelzebub. I mean, we don't mind. You can say what you like. Nobody cares all this anyway. Satanic, of course, but a wonderful word. What a marvellous sound it is, Beelzebub. You don't get many nicer conjunctions of syllables and consonants than that. Not in my book, anyway. And other people's you might, of course. I believe Satan is in history and mythology in all kinds of cultures and civilizations. It's hard to imagine the human condition without some Manichaean division between good and evil. Satan, I've said Satan again.
Yes, and Paul Merton challenge.
There was a repetition of Satan.
There was a repetition of Satan. Yes, so Paul, another correct challenge and another point and 7 seconds on Beelzebub or Beelzebub, depending on which Latin you were taught at school, starting... Yeah. Is it not? That's not Latin, no.
No,
but some of the pronunciations are... so.
Oh, you escaped well from that one, Nicholas.
I know. 7 seconds, Paul, starting now.
I can picture that satanic face now announcing the words, "Welcome to Just a Minute." And you know the smell of brimstone is in the air.
And you really think they play this game in hell, do you? So, Paul Merton, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so, and he's in the lead. One ahead of Stephen Fry, then Maria McCurlin, and then Peter Jones in that order. And, Stephen, your turn to begin. The subject is defying the laws of nature. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Something I've been doing all my adult life, I fear. I don't think it's actually possible to defy the laws of nature. Nature, the Greek phusis, of course, means what is the state of things. People often say that humanity defies the laws of nature by the invention of machines and so on. We are a product of nature. Everything comes out of us. It's natural, you see. However, we're so guilty, we're so rattled by this appalling shame of our human condition that we somehow imagine that we defy the laws of nature. We don't. We are nature. For God's sake, get that into your thick skulls, all of you. Don't feel that somehow we have to apologize to the universe for being what we are, products of nature. Proud of it, we should be. Also aware of the differences we make to the environment when nature laws seemed not to be flouted so much as to be...
We got a bit garbled there.
I don't know. I think he was looking for votes, I was...
he was doing very well.
Yeah, he was doing very well, yes. So, right. What is your challenge, then?
Well, it sort of became...
Anything, really,
yeah.
Would do, I think.
A bit deviation, really. It was a bit garbled there, wasn't it?
Well, he did repeat something, but you didn't spot that. I don't think it was garbled. No, I think he was keeping going.
Did you follow everything he was saying?
Yes, absolutely, every single word.
Would you like to repeat the last sentence?
Stephen, because of your great aplomb, I'm going to say that you didn't hesitate in any way, so you keep the subject. 18 seconds, defying the laws of nature, starting now.
It rather defies the laws of nature to have a greater aplomb than other people. However, it seems I have one, and you were the one who said it, and I must believe you, because everything you say is law, is nature to us. We wouldn't defy the laws of Nicholas Parsons any more than we defy the laws of... so, we mustn't defy them.
Stephen Fry kept going to the whistle end, gained an extra point for doing so. In fact, he started with the subject and finished with the subject, so he got was interrupted once. He got points in that round. He's equal with Paul Merton in the lead at the end of the round. Peter Jones, The Sound of Music, 60 seconds, starting now.
It was one of those great musicals that were composed by my old friends Oscar Hammerstein and Richard Rodgers, including Carousel, Oklahoma... and one other that escapes me. It was South Pacific.
Stephen Fry.
Oh, I thought he might have been thinking of the Flower Drum Song. I was helping him out there. It's another one of theirs. Not such a great one, but South Pacific is right, yes.
44 seconds to continue with The Sound of Music, starting now.
Not many people appreciate the lyrics, and they were, I thought, terrific. One in particular in South Pacific, which was, "You've got to be taught to love and hate," and I thought it was so clever of them.
Stephen Fry challenge.
Well, I do agree with that, but I think they are drifting a little from The Sound of Music,
yes,
if we're talking about the lyrics of South Pacific.
You're on to the Sound of Pacific now, not The Sound of Music. It would have been better. You would have been with The Sound of Music.
Well, that's a sort of post-mortem remark.
So Stephen has a correct challenge, and he has 31 seconds. He will tell us something now about The Sound of Music, starting now.
He who has no music. Hello.
Paul John.
Hesitation?
Yeah, first time you haven't come straight in. That's amazing. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. 30 seconds. The Sound of Music's with you, Paul, starting now.
Well, it's a universal sound. Wherever you go in the world, it has its own particular type of music. The Aborigines play musical sounds on a didgeridoo, which is a marvellously long instrument that makes very deep bass notes. If you go to somewhere like Bali, they specialise in these huge gongs which they hit regularly, which make most extraordinarily...
Maria McCurlin, challenge.
Two witches in quick succession.
Yes. Maria, you have a correct challenge. You have 8 seconds, The Sound of Music, starting now.
I'd like to...
Stephen Fry Charlie.
Well, that was as long as my hesitation.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it bloody was.
No, it wasn't. Maria, you have an incorrect challenge. You have... it was... She didn't even go for more than a second. 6.5 seconds available. The Sound of Music starting now.
I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. So...
Paul Merton Chum.
Why?
The racket.
Because if everybody in the world was singing at the same time,
it would be a beautiful sound of music.
Maria, you have 2 seconds to continue on. The Sound of Music starting now. That hesitation was definitely very strong, and there's 1 second for you on The Sound of Music starting now.
Maria von Trapp.
So Stephen Fry was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so. And Paul, your turn to begin. Goody Two Shoes. Tell us something about that in this game starting now.
Well, it's a derogatory term for people who have no apparent personal vices. They don't smoke, drink, gamble, any other sort of habits that we associate with somebody who's an interesting character. I think most individuals who are Goody Two Shoes are, in fact, quite boring. Because you have to have some kind of criminal activity to make an interesting person, I think. Look at Dr. Crippen. Who would have heard of him if he'd simply filled out his prescriptions day in, 24 hours out?
Stephen.
I concede gracefully that was brilliantly done.
Well, it was almost hesitation,
was,
but because he was so clever, struggle round it, you're going to be generous and say, let him continue. Right, another point to you, Paul. 27 seconds, Goody Two Shoes starting now.
I think people who are Goody Two Shoes are actually quite devious underneath the surface. They're up to something that the rest of us can't fathom, because there's no fun in being perfectly good. What would be the reason for...
Stephen, yes.
At that time there was a hesitation.
Yes. Goody Two Shoes is with you, Stephen. 12 seconds available, starting now.
There's never been a Goody One Shoes, has there? Or a Goody Three Shoes, which is rather mysterious. What is it about the number of feet footwear for Lil Haldi?
Yes, mumbling.
Well, all right, hesitation, if you like. 4 seconds. Goody Two Shoes with you, Maria. Starting now.
I would say that Stephen Fry was perhaps a Goody Two Shoes when he was at school. He's certainly something of a...
Yes, I'm sure Stephen's a goody two shoe when he first started, yes. Yeah. But he made up for it later, didn't he?
He's a baddie, no sandals.
Right. So, at the end of that round, Stephen Fry is 1 point ahead of Paul Merton. Maria McKernan follows, and it's her turn to begin. And the subject is My Best Impressions. Tell us something about those in this game, starting now.
It's unfortunate that I was going to do my best impression, which was Snozzle Durante. Singing, I should have my piano the other day. But of course...
Paul, you challenge.
That was your best impression.
God help us all.
I mean, that couldn't be further away.
It could have been awful, but it could still be her best impression, couldn't it?
All right, well, let's see then. As she runs the gamut.
She runs the gamut. 51 seconds, Maria.
Oh,
still
no.
Quite. My best impression.
It's too late for me to kill myself.
Carry on, now, now.
Oh, Tom. Felicity Kendall. Well, you know it.
Stephen Challenger.
Repetition of
Why you started with Jimmy Durante is beyond me, really. That is your worst one.
Well, I thought it would make the other sound better.
It did.
Yeah. I'm sorry to have interrupted the Brian Ferry, because that was obviously going to be very good.
That was a correct challenge by Stephen, but I was...
So, Stephen, you had
a correct challenge, so you take over My Best Impressions, and 37 seconds are available starting now.
I think my best impressions are made when I sit on soft wax when naked. However, perhaps the question on the card expects one to talk about impersonations, mimicry of some kind. My Mises is not really my game. I know Nicholas Parsons, when he started out, gave very good impressions. That was indeed his trade, his business. I used to do all of the postcards.
Paul Merton Charles.
Was there a hesitation there?
No, yes, I think he was running down to a halt, actually, yes.
Horrible.
Right, there we are. Paul, so you take over the subject of My Best Impressions, and there are 18 seconds starting now.
Perhaps my best impression is Clement Freud.
as he sits behind the desk with his usual bonhomie and his wonderful way of spreading happiness wherever he goes, in that voice which can't help but make you feel so light-hearted.
When Clement Freud is on the show, he sits beside Paul Merton, and so he's had a lot of practice listening to that voice in his ear. And he reproduced it most entertainingly, and he's now equal in the lead with Stephen Fry and Peter Jones. Oh, Peter, it's my first 70 years. Well, it could be mine, I don't know, but I mean, we're talking about the subject, that is it. Take it any way you like, and you'll start now.
My first 70 years was a lot of fun, really, and I enjoyed it enormously until... When I was 71, I was invited to join the National Theatre, or it may have been the Royal Shakespeare, one or other. One or other of those big companies.
Paul Merton Challenge.
It was National Car Parks.
And
But it fell at the National Theatre, did it?
Well, one or other. You know, it was at the Barbican, that's right.
Paul, have you any other challenge?
No, that was it.
No other challenge? No, that's very generous of you. So, Peter, you continue with 44 seconds still available. My first 70 years, starting now.
I was unfortunate in as much as the director of the play that I was in at the beginning was out of his mind, in my opinion, because he wanted me to do things that were quite unnatural to me, and he was dressed head to foot in black, and he was quite notorious, and people said, is he having a nervous breakdown? And I said, yes, it's the 15th year of it. And anyway, I didn't subscribe to his view of the play or the part, and I left halfway through, because the revolve didn't go round, which was one of the things that Barbican was famous for. Not it not going round, but going round.
You challenge, Paul.
Repetition of round.
Yes, that's right, yes, he did say round. I heard him say it, but it's quite true, yes. Actually, I was so transfixed with Peter's description, which was so repetitious, that I couldn't believe it. And I thought, when is someone going to challenge? And I didn't realise that Paul had, because there was no noise. Came, just the light came on, and that's why I didn't immediately leap round and say, Paul, you've challenged. According to this thing, the time is up. Did Paul challenge before the time up came? He did. Right, Paul, what was your challenge?
Well,
round.
It's
a repetition of round.
Repetition of
well
round.
Done. Now, I've got to guess how many available when
I think it was about three.
No, it's more than that, definitely. So, there are 7 seconds on my... My first 70 years, starting now.
Well, I'm only 42 at the moment, but if I do live for the appropriate time, I hope to be playing just a minute. Here.
So, Paul Merton was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's now 1 point ahead of Stephen Fry. The other two are trailing just a little bit behind them. And Maria, it's your turn to begin. Troglodytes. Tell us something about those creatures in this game, starting now.
Troglodyte, cave dweller. I had an extraordinary dream last night about Nicholas Parsons, dressed in a loincloth, dragging me round the cave by my hair.
Paul, you challenge.
Seek professional help.
Peter, you have a challenge, too.
I think he said caves twice.
Yes, that's quite right. Cave yes. dwellers and then dragging round cave. Well done.
Peter, well listened, and you have 50 seconds to tell us something about Troglodytes, starting now.
The Troglodytes, it was a pop group that started in Devon in 1960 and finished in Somerset, like many of them do, a few months later. But the original Troglodytes lived in caves, and they couldn't find any houses, and so they lived in them, and they were able to communicate with each other by tapping the wall. the bones or skulls of the dinosaurs.
Maria, you challenge.
Well, why didn't they just go outside and speak to them? Why do they have to tap the wall?
Well, this doesn't matter. I mean...
It does matter, Nicholas.
In just a minute, well, was he hesitating, repeating something, or deviating?
If you're living in a cave, it doesn't show a high degree of intelligence in the first place. So you may well tap on the wall.
We haven't come here to have an intellectual discussion about cave dwellers.
Well, why are we here then?
I was just sorry, I feel
to entertain and keep going on a subject without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. Maria, did he commit any of those particular sins or faults or break any of those rules in just a minute?
No.
Peter, so you had an incorrect challenge, and you have 28 seconds available now on troglodytes starting now.
If we were able to go back in time, millions of years, of course, enormous amount of this...
Paul, yes.
There was a hesitation.
There was a hesitation. Yes. You couldn't get another word for years. Right. 19 seconds, troglodytes with you, Paul, starting now.
We're the most charming people. They are very small. They're easily
Stephen, Charles.
So, again, really good.
Hesitation, right. Troglodytes is with you, Stephen, and 14 seconds available starting now.
I'm rather intrigued by these original troglodytes who went from Devon and ended up, as so many of them do, in Somerset. I want to know more about them. I know there was a band called the Trogs, perhaps that's...
Yes.
That's what they were, is it? Fascinating.
Oh, yes.
It's rather pleasing, isn't it?
Maria, challenge.
Well, that was a conversation.
I know. It didn't hesitate to be repeat or deviate.
But this is the interesting thing, is though it was a conversation, Stephen Fry still managed to keep going without...
As I usually do in conversations, I'm afraid.
So, Stephen, it was an incorrect challenge. You have 2 seconds on troglodytes starting now.
Lived in caves has been amply pointed out by most of our contestants.
Stephen speaking as a whistle, Wayne Gain, and that extra point. He's now one ahead of Paul Merton. As we go into the final round, followed by Peter Jones, Maria McCone, that order, not far behind. Stephen begins, and it's a bee in my bonnet is the subject. Stephen, you start now.
There is a bee in my bonnet. There are two N's in my bonnet, and one Y in my bonnet.
Maria McCone, challenge.
Sorry, no, I was doing bonnet. And that's part of it, isn't it? Sorry, Stephen.
No, that's right.
Stephen, it's still with you. A bee in my bonnet, 53 seconds available, starting now.
In Regency days, or at least in what Georgette Heyer calls Regency days, they used to say... I've said Regency days twice. Sorry.
Stephen, you did exactly what you did last time.
No, I'm sorry,
time.
I keep doing that. It's
you
excitement.
You challenged yourself.
Oh, yes.
I know. So what is your challenge?
Well, I said Regency days twice. Rather
I know you did. So that's a correct challenge.
Oh, thank you.
You're getting too clever at this game.
I can't help but feel this is a loophole that should be closed.
Stephen, another point, 48 seconds, a bee in my bonnet starting now.
A maggot in my brain was another phrase meaning the same thing in the old days. A bee in the bonnet means, of course, to have some sort of obsession, some idée fixe or other. I have a bee in my bonnet about Christian scientists, for example. I think they're rather wonderful and rather sweet people. I meant to say Scientologists, who I think are absolutely arse-wipingly bad. However, I got it slightly confused. I have a bee in my bonnet about my inability to separate different cult religions, one of which is respectable, the other which is simply appalling. I have a bee in my bonnet about the fact that I have a bee in my bonnet. That's the most annoying thing. Why does one get so exercised about life and all its variety? Losing a key or a sock or something can send one into an absolute spin. There are so many more important things to worry about. One gets bees in one's bonnet about silly things. That's what the phrase really refers to.
If the key is the key to your house, it's quite...
Fair point. I accept that. If it is indeed the opening device that unlocks your house, then you've got something of a problem.
Paul Merton has challenged
Well, he definitely wasn't talking while Peter was. But it's got to be hesitation.
Yes, I think we interpret that as hesitation. I mean,
can we throw each other off our stride simply by talking?
When another panelist actually, it was your talking, starts to have a conversation with you. I know he's
being friendly, but...
he's playing with great
waiting
style.
For the bus, you know.
You should have saved your material for when you get in, Peter. Using the key. Anyway, no, I agree with your challenge, Paul. So you have a point for that, of course. And you have 6 seconds available.
You'll find I loosened the lid now. You can unscrew it pretty easily.
Paul, you have a correct challenge. A bee in my bonnet starting now.
Perhaps the biggest bee in my bonnet is that in just a minute you are allowed to repeat yourself, then challenge...
Well, as I said earlier, that was to be the last round, and indeed it is. So let me give you the final situation. Maria McCurlin, who gave such sterling contribution, and against this aggressive male opposition. Outnumbered 3-1. Great. But she finished only just in fourth place. A couple of points behind Peter Jones. Did magnificently finishing in third place. He was a few points behind Stephen Fry. And Stephen was only 1 point behind Paul Merton. So we say, Paul, you are the winner this week. So it only remains for me to say thank you to these four outstanding exponents of Just a Minute: Paul Merton, Stephen Fry, Peter Jones, and Maria McCurdy. And we hope this audience here in the Radio Theatre in London has enjoyed themselves, because we've enjoyed being with them and entertaining them. From them, from the panellists, from me, Nicholas Parsons, thank you for tuning in. Be with us the next time we play Just a Minute. Till then, bye-bye.